time to heed the call. An emergency. A dispatch from the emergency. Heed emergency broadcast. Got there. Wow. Dan Hansis here. Mark Sessler. Sessie, it's official. And it's a big one. The Cleveland Browns are finalizing a trade. Reported just now. That will send two-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Myles Garrett, to the Rams. Going back to Cleveland, two-time Pro Bowl pass rusher Jared Verse, a 2027 first-round pick, and other draft compensation that is still being negotiated, sources told NFL Network's Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero and Adam Schefter. It's the scoop of the year, and here we are. And the only thing I could say, Sessie, because I got to hear from you right now, and Connor's going to join us in a bit. We just recently played the old Johnny Manziel Draft Day 2014 from Radio City Music Hall, and one of the iconic lines from Dave Damschuk. How does it feel? How does it feel? Myles Garrett, no longer a Cleveland Brown, but you got a big smile.
I've wanted this to happen. I've been talking about this since two off seasons ago. I love Myles Garrett. He is arguably outside of Jim Brown, the best Cleveland Brown ever. This needed to happen. I think both teams won this trade. Cleveland somehow sold high after an incredible season from Myles Garrett, but there was an element as a Browns fan for me of watching this incredible player and this marvelous career withering away on a team that went 58-90 and won during his time there. And so I'm happy for Myles Garrett to go to the Rams, who also won this trade. I really believe so. But for Cleveland, it was finally time to take a look at where you are in your rebuilding process, who you are, and move on. And there's going to be a bunch of Browns fans who bought Myles Garrett jerseys and felt like he should be there for his whole career to see a winner. You got to be smart in the NFL, and you got to make moves at the right time. And I think the Browns, this time around, were correct in their assumption that they needed to let this player move on from them.
It felt like the right time. In fact, and we've been in lockstep on this, Sessie. Like, it felt a year overdue, quite frankly. When Myles Garrett came out in 2025 and said he wanted, or there were reports, or he'd floated that he wanted to play for a winner, and there's been a lot of losing, and it's time for a fresh start. And then that actually led to him getting the biggest contract ever for a defensive player. And then he comes out this season, and he sets the NFL sack record. And then if you follow the breadcrumbs on this, a few months back when they restructured the contract that gave them wiggle room financially, both this year and next, to make a move, everybody was saying, okay, it could happen. Now, then the question was, is this going to happen before the draft? And like, I love this move for the Browns. It's one of those things. It's two ways to look at it. I'll look at it from the positive, and we could talk about why some things are negative about it, but Myles Garrett is a perfect example as a all-time player, defensive end. But you can't build a champion around a player like that necessarily, right? He's almost like what the Rams are doing is what makes sense to me. He's like the final piece to go and go get that chip. They had this guy. He's been a transcendent talent for 9 years in the league, and they were never really able to build a winner. In fact, they had some of the worst teams in football. So obviously, building the team with him as the central figure financially and otherwise wasn't working. So they realized that, and I think they get a little fortunate, Mark, because coming off last year when I thought they should have pulled the trigger, he stayed healthy, thank God. He had another monster season. He was still, you know, exiting his 20s and still had prime years ahead of him. So they got a second chance to do this, and they make the move. So from the Brown side of it, I think getting back Jared Verse, who is a star in his own right, is a big part of this. The draft pick compensation, which we're going to get more in fully detailed and hopefully in the next few minutes, but that's going to help them building toward tomorrow. And remember, like other teams out there right now, this is the hold season to get to next year. You're using this season to see what you have at quarterback, but most likely you're going to draft a quarterback in next year's QB rich draft class. And now the Browns have even more ammo to go get the guy who you can build a franchise around successfully if everything else is in order.
Right. They're back in that world of having two first round picks. And you said it, Jared Verse, the rookie of the year in 2024. I mean, you kind of sold. You got the best experience from Myles Garrett ever a year ago. It's something that no one will ever forget. And it ties him to the Browns forever. But you move on from him and you get Jared Verse. And you open up a lot of cap space down the road. That was a huge issue for them. To me, this is an incredibly young team. That's what they want to be. They drafted beautifully a year ago. It looks like they had another good draft this year. We'll see. Myles Garrett just started to not fit there, to your point, that you can't, it's not an aging quarterback that you know you can still play with for five more years. It's a defensive, bull rushing mastermind of a player, but on a team that probably needs 2 to 3 more years to really become what they are. And I feel like we're always saying that about these bad teams. But I do think that outside the Deshaun Watson thing, like, they've made a lot of smart moves. I agree with where they're going. Myles Garrett started to feel like that expensive piece of gold that just doesn't quite fit on this roster. It's a great fit for the Rams, and the Rams were the perfect team to do this. And it turns that NFC West into a nasty dogfight.
I mean, yeah, it already was. And the Rams obviously still smarting from falling just short in the NFC title game, have gone all in on a defensive rebuild this year. We know what they did with their secondary, trading away a first round pick to get the lockdown corner that they were missing. And now this was, if this, what makes it fascinating for the Rams is that, yes, Jared Verse was an ascendant star. He was the centerpiece when Aaron Donald retired, when they went and they redeveloped that defensive line and turned it almost immediately into a strength again. And Verse was kind of like the shining star, showing how they were able to develop another potential superstar. Now, I think Myles Garrett is a superstar. I think Jared Verse is a star. There's a difference. And it makes sense. The Rams, once you bring in a talent like Garrett, you're going to have to make some financial decisions. So Verse probably wasn't going to get another contract. So that makes sense. It all checks out. The question, I guess, from the Rams side of it, if I'm a Rams fan, knowing how impactful a player Verse is enough, are you getting enough juice out of the squeeze here? Is Garrett going to be the difference maker that they need him to be to get over the hump in the NFC, get back to the Super Bowl and win it again? I think the thing that, to me, hurts less, although there is a degree of risk here because you have an old quarterback in Matthew Stafford and right now a backup quarterback who's never played in the league, obviously, who they just took in the draft, that right now the draft picks that are going to go back to the Browns aren't they don't look sexy from here, right? And that's what I was wondering when the whispers were out there about this trade. I was like, shoot, like a Browns-Rams trade, the only thing that doesn't quite add up to me is you're not going to get high first rounders, most likely, from the Rams, who are a true Super Bowl contender. Okay, now it makes sense. You add a top flight defender. And I wonder where Jared Verse's head is right now, Ceci, going from the Los Angeles Rams to the Cleveland Browns. He'll be able to drive faster now. Myles Garrett won't be able to drive as fast anymore here in the LA traffic. But yeah, like Verse's headspace, I'm wondering where that's at. But from the Rams standpoint and the Browns standpoint, it's a trade that makes a lot of sense for both teams who are in very different places developmentally. The Browns very clearly saying this is not about 2026. We're building for something big tomorrow, and you feel like this could be remembered as a moon landing moment, Mark, if you do build a contender off of this blockbuster trade. And for the Rams, I think they are the favorite in the NFC now, with all due respect to the defending champion, Seattle Seahawks. So you can't get down on that move from that standpoint. So I know there always has to be a winner and a loser, but to your point, I think there can be two.
Right. Like, no one got fleeced here. You're not looking at one team and saying you got jobbed. I guess in my mind, if when you wake up this morning and the whispers are there that Myles Garrett's going to get traded anywhere, my mind is thinking 2 to 3 number one picks, right? Like multiple number one picks. And especially if you're a team like the Rams that probably you're going to be getting, if you're the Browns, pick 26 through 32. So a little, that's the one thing I'm a little bit stuck up on, but it sounds like the Browns really did not want to trade Myles Garrett entering this offseason. But then the money moves start happening where they're deferring pay down the road. And the Rams, when the Rams, I think it was the player, it was the Jared Verse side of this that made so much sense, because you're not just stripping your defense entirely of what made it special. Verse is younger. He's obviously looks like a complete ascendant talent. And you move on from Myles Garrett entering the time of his career where he's not going to do what he did last year again. I just don't believe he will. Is he still, to your question, can he go in and be a positive minus first for the Rams? Unequivocally, yes. Like, this is Myles Garrett. This is like the best the best player in the league, but the two teams needed to do what they did here. I think no one lost.
Why wouldn't Myles Garrett could be better on the Rams?
Well, I mean, okay, maybe
playing
not
with an unreal defense, you know, with the players on that defensive line and a secondary that's going to be able to cover better, and quarterbacks are holding the ball longer, and they're going to be playing with leads, and he's going to be able to pin his ears. Like, this, like, I'm not doing the trade. If I'm the Rams and I'm like, well, I don't think we have him in his prime anymore, but he's still going to be good enough, I think you do this trade knowing you have 1 to 2 to 3 more prime seasons left of Myles Garrett. And that coincides once again, as we talked about, with Matthew Stafford, with he just restructured and signed an extension. He has 2 years left with the Rams. Maybe Myles Garrett has 2 vintage prime years left. Bang, let's go win a couple chips together. Let's see what happens. All right, I think we have, is Connor here? Connor Orr from Sports Illustrated fame. I'm sure he's been furiously filing a column on that. There he is. Oh, look at that.
Hello, Connor. What a morning.
What a morning. What a morning. How are you, Mr. Orr? We were just talking about, let's get going this way, Connor. I'm curious. I'm sure you have a piece that you'll be filing for SI that everybody could check out. But it certainly feels, from Mark and I's perspective, as one of those rare win-win situations, but also interesting in that two totally wins for totally different reasons. But we like the trade on both sides. How about you?
I love it for both sides, because I think they ultimately both got what they wanted, right? Cleveland gets the season out of Myles Garrett that they can put on the statue outside of their stadium one day. And Garrett is kind of this kind of very theoretical figure. Like, he was a great player that played for the Browns. But the Rams get a player that I think helps Sean McVay flip his offensive philosophy defensively. And it's going to change the way we see defensive football. And I hate to be hyperbolic in these situations, but I really do think that this move has a chance to cause major ripple effects throughout the NFL. And just very quickly, like, McVay was able to change the way that the game was played by, okay, I'm going to take my wide receivers and I'm going to play them like tight ends. I'm going to take this guy and I'm going to play it like that. It changes the math for the defense and it makes life really hard for them. Now you're giving McVay and Chris Shula a player who's been double teamed at the highest rate in the NFL and is most effective against those double team rates in the NFL. And you're going to be able to download all this information constantly. Well, what players are they using to put against him? So now I can do this. What players are they using to put against him now? Now I can do that. Myles Garrett makes you play 11 versus 9 football on every down. But if you give it to Sean McVay, it's like giving an artist paints. It's like, hello, baby. You know, let's see what we come up with here. This is very exciting.
And it's the kind of thing that gets Chris Shula hired as a head coach after the Rams win a Super Bowl with Myles Garrett as possibly the player of the game. I mean, it's like to dial up Jim Schwartz if you're Chris Shula and just ask, pick his brain on how to make this work. He already knows, but like, you're right that, I mean, in Cleveland, Myles Garrett faced double and triple teams on every play. Even they had good defenses too, and that's the case in LA, but he's proven he can deal with double teams, and it puts an offense into a really tough situation, all every offensive line in that division.
Okay, we have some sound here. Let me start with this, and I know certain people, especially on the show, are very hot about Todd Monken as being lightning in a bottle and a secretly great hire. This just, to me, reiterates Monken being a sacrificial lamb, transitionary figure in this organization. The Browns aren't going to get better with Myles Garrett playing in Los Angeles. They still don't have a quarterback, most likely. This could be a very long season, and that might be the point for the Browns. And Todd Monken's here to lord over the enterprise. The Browns were holding a charity function of some kind, I believe, in Cleveland today, and as the rumors were picking up that Garrett could be on the move, reporters were obviously asking the new head coach about, like, did he know this was coming? Would he have taken the job, for instance, if you knew Myles Garrett would be taken out of here at a fire sale? Let's hear what the coach's commentary was before the trade was reported.
But he's going to be on the team. Do you expect him to be here when we get to the season?
Well, he's not like any other player. I mean, I'm never told who's going to be on the team, who's not going to be on the team, if that's a question. I mean, every day we evaluate the roster. Andrew evaluates the roster. Management evaluates the roster. And like I said, he's no different than any other player we've got. So it's, I don't know how to respond to that based on, because it's really no different today than it's been for the last however many months I've been the head coach.
Have you been assured he'll be here June 9th?
No, I wasn't assured that when I took the job. I was never assured of anything when I took the job, other than once I signed my contract.
And poor son of a bitch.
Whatever my contract said, that's what I was assured. And no matter what any of us coaches sign up for, is we show up every day and we coach the guys that are in the building like we've done all, since we've been here. That hasn't changed.
June 9th, the date that you heard floated there, that is the mandatory OTAs for the Cleveland Browns. So that the clock was ticking with Garrett having to be in the building, and if he wasn't, he would face fines. So getting the deal done a week and a half ahead of that also cleans things up. So I don't know, Connor, where do you come down on Monken? You think where do you think he stands? Or do you think this was something that kind of was known inside this building for months, and they were just waiting for this June 1st date for the financial reasons? Was it kind of a done deal, you think, internally in that building that this player was moving on?
I think so. I mean, and if nobody prepped Monken for this, then I think that that was a bad job organizationally. I think he probably knew that this was coming. And, you know, we got to go back to that strange contract restructure a couple of months ago, right? And Andrew Berry did the one-on-ones with the reporters. I believe it was at the owners' meetings. And I remember he said, like, can you please stop asking about this? And he was kind of had that strange look on his face. I mean, they knew then that he was gone. There was no other reason.
Yeah, we have that sound, because I just, not to interrupt, Connor, we'll come back to you. But this, let it be a reminder to everyone that in the NFL, you are allowed to lie directly to reporters and the world. And it's just something that's understood as the business. I don't know if it was always like this, where you were allowed to be blatantly dishonest at this level. This was Barry at the owners' meetings in March.
So can you state unequivocally that you're not trading Myles Garrett?
I'd say this, Mary Kay. Myles is a career Brown.
So sincere.
He is one of the faces of our organization. I think we've been very clear, both past and present, in terms of our feelings of that. So I understand all the questions. I'll be honest, I don't really want to waste a ton more breath on the topic.
Yeah. Sure. But you feel like you guys are in a good spot with Myles?
We do.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's so robotic. He's such a robotic...
He's almost a survivor is what he is.
A scholarly type speaker. I don't know. I tend to think this was a possibility dating back to last offseason. The deal needed to be right and the timing needed to be right. As for Monken, my one thought is Todd Monken has never been up on stage anywhere crying tears over Myles Garrett not being there, not being part of it. He hasn't come out against any of that when it was going on. I tend to think he knew. I just tend to think that it would be impossible for him to not know.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so.
But I would hope so, too.
Organizations like this, you can never trust. But Monken almost seems like he's so hard on his sleeve that he would fail to even hide that if it happened. And he seemed like a guy that already kind of knew what was going down as he's answering that question.
It was funny because it was Ian or somebody just said, the Browns had no plans to trade Myles Garrett, but the Rams just kept calling and calling.
Oh,
and it's like, what? You know, that never worked with a woman in my life, but, like, you know, it's one of these situations where, like, did the Browns one day just be like, all right, fine. They called five times. It seems like they really want one of the five greatest defensive players of, like, the last 50 years. It's like, no, if you think you can use him, keep him. If you're going to trade him all along, trade him.
It's like, know? Connor, you've never met a woman like the Browns.
She's complicated. We're going to take a quick break here. A reminder, by the way, to like, subscribe, comment here on the live stream here. We have, obviously, a lot of heatedness in the chat right now. We're flying comments up as they come, and maybe we'll do a couple questions at the end if, Justin, you see anything interesting. But let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll continue to break down the blockbuster of the year. decade?
Smash that like
century,
button as well.
Millennium? Smash it. Smash it. Be right back. All right, we are back. Let's take a look at this Rams depth chart, man. This team is loaded. Whoa. All right, so Matthew Stafford, a quarterback. And again, love the trade for the Browns, Mark. I really do because, you know, I think about, oh no, he's going to talk about the NBA again. I think about when the Nets traded for all those old guys, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and traded with the Celtics and then inadvertently helped birth a champion for Boston when those guys got old and then all opted out. And then the Nets became a laughingstock and all those supposedly buried first round picks became lottery picks. I know nothing ever goes right for our teams, Mark, but there are crazier things than Stafford's back going out in September and that season going to hell. So it's like beyond everything else, it's a good roll of the dice. But in the here and now, and you're just looking at the roster, Matthew Stafford is the reigning MVP. You have Ty Simpson behind him, who's obviously the 13th overall pick in the draft. You have Davante Adams and Puka Nacua. I wondered when there was the percolations were out there, would the Rams maybe try to move Puka? And then I was like, if you sent Puka Nacua to Cleveland, Ohio,
no, we've
the place
seen
would be
before.
Burnt to the ground
right.
within hours. You have obviously the strong offensive line. You have Colby Parkinson, Tyler Higbee. You have Kyren Williams, Blake Corum at running back. And obviously McVay helming it. And then the defense. We know that Puna Ford, Brandon Fisk, Kobe Turner, and now you add the great Myles Garrett. To the mix. Jalen Watson is there now. Trent McDuffie is there now. Quentin Lake is there. This is a loaded team, Connor. So again, when you talk about win-win, you got to respect it, a team that sees the window open and refuses to rest on its laurels.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's been forcing me to think a lot about the whole, I guess, cottage industry that's built around the idea that it's really smart to trade declining assets for draft picks, because the rebooted Browns have been around since 1999. 17 of those seasons have featured a top 10 pick. I believe 9 of those seasons have featured a top 5 pick. And so what Andrew Berry, I think, is really good at is just perpetually selling this idea that, like, what I will turn the picks into is going to work. And what I don't hate about it is the fact that, like, they've allowed him to fail so many times that it actually does seem like they are getting better at finding applicable solutions with the draft. I mean, this last draft was really good. The last two drafts, I think, were really good. But at the same time, none of it matters if you don't win a Super Bowl. And what the Rams have understood better than anyone else is, like, life in the NFL is in 2-year increments. Nothing else matters, really. I mean, and they are building in 2-year increments. Then they're reestablishing a farm system, building in 2-year increments. They keep going that way. And I just think it's such a smart and exciting way to build football. And I don't know, it's just different. And I love it.
And it's like the Browns are a team that have been rebuilding for 25 years. The Rams rebuilt their Super Bowl team that fell apart a little bit. They rebuilt it in 2. The second best rebuilding job is the Seattle Seahawks. And so you got two teams in the same division, but the Rams do it their own way. They shied away from trading the first round pick situation. They're back in that game again. And you have to totally trust them because A, look at the roster Dan just mentioned. B, look at the history. Look at the track record of the coach and the GM. Like, and the fact that Myles Garrett is an older asset to trade for, but he's not old. Like, he's still got, I think, to Dan, to your point earlier, 2 fantastic, if not 3, seasons left. He has proven he can play hurt. He plays through all sorts of maladies we'll never hear about. He is one of the toughest players in the league, and he completely changes that defense. So the Rams going for it, I don't see this as a risk because I don't think they value where their first round pick would be to begin with. It's the verse part for me that's like, you're giving up a young player.
I want to just expand for a minute on my point here because Mark touched on it, and I just think that this can't be understated enough. So it's actually above 55% of the time that Myles Garrett gets double teamed. And I was talking to an offensive coordinator who's faced him a bunch of times when the trade broke, went down. And he was saying that it's not just like, oh, we have to double team him. It's like, who? Because there are certain guys on the team that just, even if you double teamed him, aren't going to be useful in those situations. And then it's like, what am I taking away from the other side of the formation? What am I taking away from the offensive line? What am I taking away from the wide receivers? You know, who is not going out to receive a pass now? And how does that affect what the quarterback is doing? And by giving McVay all this information, because he's going to see it in real time, he's going to digest all this film, he's going to be able to walk over to Chris Shula's office and be like, oh my God, they're going to try to use the tight end in this situation and the H-back in this situation and the wide receiver in this situation. So on these downs, you're going to take your corners or your safeties and you're going to blitz them and there's going to be nobody there. And the reliability of Myles Garrett receiving double teams, because again, like Jared Verse was maybe like 25% of the time. Myles Garrett is double that, more than double that, right? The reliability of that occurrence is going to just allow the Rams to fire at the quarterback on every down. It's going to be a nightmare to be able to play, to have to play against this team.
I do love when you have a transcendent, otherworldly, once in a generation type player, and then he gets put in a situation where you feel like you're going to be able to truly maximize and see what he's all about. And Garrett in that Rams scheme, playing with a team that is so much better than the Browns. Now, we also know that he really got along well with the previous defensive coordinator of Cleveland, and that was maybe another sign when they went in a different direction and went with Monken that this was going to happen. We'll see if Chris Shula has the goods to be able to fully take advantage of what he has here. But I think about, he's one of the, obviously, the biggest winners. Like the whole offseason for Chris Shula has been a big win. But now this is obviously the cherry on top. Another winner, I would say, is Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Aaron Rodgers, because Myles Garrett will not be squaring off two times a season against them.
And left tackles everywhere.
In the division, yes. All the left tackles and the poor right tackles that got schemed up to go against Myles Garrett. That's all. Those are wins. And then you look at the division he's going to. Okay, it's losers. All the quarterbacks that are in the NFC West that aren't Matthew Stafford. But I'll key in specifically, obviously, on the Seahawks. There were reports that the Seahawks were potentially in on this as well in some capacity. We're going to get more of that being fleshed out in time. Maybe not at all, but I did see one tweet and a report out there that the Seahawks and Rams were maybe the two finalists. The 49ers, again, a team that I have some doubts about where they stand in 2026. To fashion yourself a true contender when you are very clearly, I think, the third best team in your own division, it's a tough spot. So if I'm a Niners fan right now, I'm like, damn, I feel like there's an arms race going on in this division and I'm not even in it anymore.
The 49ers, I think, so, and this is what's really interesting. And I think if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm now triply pissed about the fact that this game is in Australia in week one, because
Shanahan's going to explode. Right?
Because the 49ers were probably the team that was best equipped to handle Myles Garrett, because you have Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle, and they can both assist as a secondary blocker and also, you know, be a receiver or whatever, an offensive weapon, a threat. But George Kittle, even if he's like almost all the way back in his rehab, is not going to fly 16 hours to Melbourne in week one of the NFL season, and then you lose him for the rest of the year. So if you're San Francisco, having Kittle in that is almost completely thrown out the window, and you lose that one, you know, you lose that player for that one very critical game, which could end up having divisional playoff implications, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, also we should talk about the Cardinals at some point and just
who? Like, wait, what? Who?
How? At some point.
How much of a staggering...
Are we talking about the structure of the Catholic Church again? What are Cardinals?
How staggering...
St. Louis Cardinals?
How staggering of a mismatch is this going to be? Like, I mean, you know, Carson Beck against, you know, with fledgling offensive line. Like, this is going to be... Oh, my no. God.
I mean, they're going to get... Again, I'll reiterate with the Cardinals why the Jake Brisket holdout is so fundamentally humorous to me. You know, they know what's happening. They're like, we probably don't want to go 0-17 because that sucks. But 1-16, baby, here we go, and let's start
Garrett
over next year.
May hand the Cardinals Arch Manning. Think about that.
Don't talk about him.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, like, you know, burying the bodies in the Manning family, there is no way in hell Archie Sr. is going to let that boy go to the Cardinals.
No, that's not an occurrence.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yes, Justin.
We got some updated Super Bowl odds, if anybody's curious.
Look at you.
That's why he's the Browns producer. Have risen up the board, have they?
I do want to. Yeah, there's two questions I have. I have the Rams and the Browns. Look at that. The Rams are now the favorites to win Super Bowl 61. They are
I
now.
I thought they were already in spots.
They may have been, but this is a pretty staggering. Yeah. I mean, if you just look at the
drop-off. It's plus 600 for the Rams. And then the next closest teams are the Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens that are plus 1,000. So there's the Rams, there's a gap. And then the Bills, Ravens, Seahawks are all seen as kind of locked in the same territory with the Chiefs and the Eagles, the Patriots, the Chargers right behind them. But yeah, the Rams are now, at least where the money's moving now, immediately after this news breaks, into clear favorite status. And as everyone knows, the team that is widely favored to win the Super Bowl on June 1st always wins the Super Bowl. So why even study the game until next spring?
Sure.
And if you're curious, the Browns are third longest odds at plus 20,200 to 1.
So I'm unsurprised by
Justin,
that.
Help me with that because you're the man deep into gambling. So if they're 20,000 to 1 and I
200 to 1. Plus
20,000 to 1.
So I believe it. So if I put $100 down on the Browns and Shedeur Sanders turns into Patrick Mahomes on like Jose Canseco steroids, how much would I make?
10,000?
Give it
I
a
hope
shot.
You're right. Didn't sound confident.
Why don't you put
$10? $20,000. $100 wins you $20,000.
Why not put $20 on the bottom 16 teams every season? You're probably going to cash out with one of them.
Yeah, but you probably don't win. Well, I guess if they're
probably
more than 16,
well, it's a one. There is a possibility.
It sounds like a graver bet where he's just going to Vegas, getting up 14 tickets and lighting them on fire, essentially.
I mean, the bottom 16 teams, you think any of these teams win the Super Bowl? Jacksonville, Tampa Bay, no, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Washington, Indianapolis. It gets worse from there.
Like, I don't hate all of those, but sure.
Go ahead, Mark, go ahead and do it.
Go ahead. I will try. I'll use our company
We'll track
funds.
It. We'll track it. All right. Any other thoughts on this trade before we see what else is going on in our league on this huge day? I want to throw it back to Sessler here. Sessler, now we are about a half hour into the show, and now I'm gonna gas you up a little bit because you know, just like it happened with Sauce Gardner and you know, you want your young superstars that you draft and develop and become household names to retire and all that with your team and win chips, but it doesn't work out that way a lot. But at the same time, this could be the inflection point. This could be the sliding doors moment for your Cleveland Browns. We talked about the New York Knicks last week and how the New York Knicks fan base is reveling in the joy of suddenly becoming a contender. And we talked about who was like a version of the Knicks. I think we got that wrong. I think the more fun conversation off that is like, what is the fan base that you would want to see in the NFL explode in from being laughing stock into all of a sudden like being in a joyful moment where they're on an amazing playoff run to the championship? Like the Browns fans are very high up on that list. And for you and all the other Browns fans out there, I think it's a pretty easy pill to swallow, even though maybe from the outside, some would say no. Myles Garrett was not going to win a championship here. Myles Garrett, you know, with many of the things that we were having fun with about Myles Garrett, Mark, about his tendency to look for the cameras, to make that poor gymnast girlfriend a secondary character in his character arc during the Olympics.
Snowboarder.
You know, sending Myles Garrett to Los Angeles right here. That makes a lot of sense for Myles Garrett. It feels like the right spot in his life to be playing for the LA Rams. And now you and the Cleveland Browns fans can look at a roster and be like, okay, we probably don't have the quarterback. Many people say we probably don't have the coach, but maybe I do. I'm a Browns fan, and I think Monken's the next big dude that everybody overlooked. But you are set up well to build a contender now if you can just stay the course. And that's an exciting thing. You are loaded when you look at the next 3 years in terms of assets with some big draft class coming up.
Yes. And I think that it's interesting to look at Andrew Berry. How many GMs in today's NFL can make arguably the worst sports trade of our lifetime with the Deshaun Watson move, and then turn around and trade Myles Garrett? So all of this at some point needs to work. Or Andrew Berry, who continues to, we talk about Les Snead. Andrew Berry does some wild things too. He also was drafted pretty well, but it is an inflection point. It's a turning point. Myles Garrett was on this team for almost a decade. They won 50 games. And they were not about to win 50 more in the next couple of years. So it had to happen. I think there are going to be Browns fans out there that hate this because you just want the best player on your team to stay on your team. I'm just in this world where at this point, I want to try anything that'll work. I've been pushing for this and it happened. So I feel like philosophically very satisfied with the move. We'll see how it works. But you are right about Myles Garrett. He's that veteran player going to the Super Bowl team in shiny LA. And I want this moment for Myles Garrett too. That's where I'll leave it.
And if there are Browns fans out there that are pissed about this, like, I get it. Maybe you have a Myles Garrett $180 jersey. Or he's your idol as a player. Like, I get that element of the fan base, but I just don't see any way where Connor, I said this before you jumped on. So I'll say it again. Like, Garrett might be the perfect example. And I know there was so much systemic rot and poor decision-making around the Browns that it clouded this as using this as empirical evidence toward the point I'm about to make, but I'm going to make it anyway. Myles Garrett is one of the greatest and most impactful defensive players we've ever seen. And he played at the height of his powers, avoided any serious injuries for those 9 seasons with the Browns, and the organization went nowhere with him. And to me, it just underlines, again, the something that Chris Wessling used to bring up. And by the way, Lakeisha and Link stayed with us over the weekend, and it was wonderful catching up with the Wesslings. Wes used to talk about how Vince Lombardi said that football is the most beautiful game, but it has one fundamental problem, that the quarterback is way too important. That is great and as perfect a football player as Myles Garrett was, he alone would not be able to build the culture and a champion. So, because it's not the right match of player and timeline, the Browns are moving on and moving on while they could still get a high level of a haul back their way. So again, like, I think there's a little bit to that as well. Agree or disagree?
So I think that the Browns, and I promise this isn't going to be a rant on analytics, it's just going to be a little bit of a rant on analytics. I think that the Browns have historically failed because they've never been able to view their team for what it is. And they have always viewed their team in the context of where the NFL is going and how they can get there. And what I mean by that is, I think that there was a world where at some point over this decade run with Myles Garrett, that the Browns became the Seahawks before the Seahawks. They realized that they had a super dominant defensive line. Let's hire a coach that understands defensive line movement really well. And then you can kind of build the roster out from there. That'll be our strength. And then just get mid-level play from the quarterback. Instead, what they did was they were like, oh, this is a quarterback-driven league. We have to trade all of our first-round picks for Deshaun Watson, or we need receivers, and so we're going to go in this direction. We're going to go in that direction. And they've done that with Myles Garrett, with Joe Thomas, with a lot of these like transcendently great players that they had that just ended up making no impact. And I think that that will be their cyclical illness in the Andrew Berry era, is like they're always going to try to be what they're not. And I think that Myles Garrett is the perfect encapsulation of that. They missed the window to maximize him. And now you have to trade him.
Well, I would say one thing. The team they just traded him to sold the farm for Jared Goff in the draft and then traded a bunch of picks for Matthew Stafford. So it's not wrong to do that.
Right.
They've just failed at finding the right quarterback over, and they've failed in marvelous fashion in finding the right quarterback. That's the problem.
I don't know if you guys talked about this though, but in terms of this being a building block, I mean, I do think that it's worth mentioning that, like, it's okay to be underwhelmed by this. Like, the Rams are going to be picking 29, 30, 31, 32. Like, I don't know how much that first rounder and whatever it is, second, third, whatever they end up getting kind of later on. I mean, this is that's what I'm struggling with. I mean, Myles Garrett is, you know, I talked to a GM about this when the contract was readjusted, right? He's not Max Crosby. He's better. He's better in every way. And Max Crosby was a 2 first-round pick player from the Ravens, right? So theoretically, you should be able to get more.
We did mention that before you jumped on, that like, if I knew when I woke up that this was happening today, my mind automatically goes to multiple first-round picks. It doesn't go anywhere other than that.
Right.
Jared Verse helps me a lot with what went down. But I do want to study the rest of the draft haul, because it is surprising to me that Myles Garrett, of any player in the league, isn't automatically bringing multiple first-round picks, especially from a team, like we said, that's going to be picking from 26 to 32, right, over the next couple of years. So it's not really even a first-round pick the way that, look at this last draft. You only had maybe 12 to 13 players in, right, it that people graded as a first-round pick. But it's that quarterback draft next year. You've got 2 firsts. You've got a bunch of other draft capital in general. It's with an eye to the quarterback, along with 5 or 6 other teams, including Dan's Jets.
All right. So before we take one more break and then catch up on other news in the league, we should point out that we're having this conversation. The deal, it can't even be official till after 4 p.m. Eastern today, Monday, June 1st. Is there a physical that needs to be involved?
You better not fail that physical.
I was going to say, get him over there.
Yeah. So let's understand that after the Max Crosby incident and the fact that, you know, this has not been finalized, something could happen between now and then, but everything out there and all the reporting obviously is that this is a done deal. And again, I need somebody to find Jared Verse and just see where he's at right now. That is whiplash. You are in arguably the best place to be in professional football, living in Southern California for a Super Bowl favorite, homegrown guy, probably has set up roots in Los Angeles. And you think, oh, I have developed at a level that I'm going to get another big contract and I'm going to play here for 10 plus years. And then all of a sudden you get traded for the best defensive player of your generation, which on one hand is flattering. But also I'm sure it's a difficult situation, because you know you just went from, I'm going to be playing relevant football perhaps into February, to I'm on a team that would probably like to lose 13 to 15 games this year.
And you've got to tell wife/girlfriend, hey, we've got this great place in LA. Now we're going to move to Berea, Ohio.
Yes. She's like, what's it like there? Well, it was built on an Indian burial ground. But
beyond
there's
that,
There's no proof that the howling from under the floorboards is connected to that. They haven't tied it together. Their scientists have not proven it yet. So come along with me.
What is the Cleveland supermarket? Are they like a Piggly Wiggly? What are they? Giant Eagle? What are they? Walmart?
He's not a Ralph's guy anymore. Kroger? I'll tell you that.
Because you know what? Sometimes that really changes. You know, I like you spend so much time in there. And yes, you leave the kind of the superfood capital of the world in LA with all this access to like wonderful fruits and vegetables. But you fly to Ohio, sure, and if there's just like a nice Whole Foods or something.
Well, they got some Trader Joe's there. They got Walmart's and Giant Eagle. Apparently, he's going to be a big Giant Eagle shopper going forward. Anyway, hang in there, Jared Verse. You're still a wonderful athlete and a star football player and potentially a good human. I don't know you. And there are plenty of beautiful women in Cleveland as well. Well, there's 8 to 12 potentially.
There are more than that. At least 20.
All right, let's take one more break. Stay there. We'll get you caught up on the rest of the news. Including this AJ.
Yes. We got full trade terms.
Full trade terms. All right, let's hear them.
Okay, from Rap Sheet. Now agreed to and official, the Browns are trading defensive player of the year, Myles Garrett, to the Rams for star edge Jared Verse, a 2027 first round pick, a 2028 second round pick, and a 2029 third round pick per me, Adam Schefter, and Tom Pelissero.
Enough. There's too many of you guys. Listen, we understand ESPN and NFL Network have merged. You guys got to come up with something other than hitting us up with a triple header scoop. Like, figure it out. Yes, Connor.
What does this make you think of? why were the Browns trying to extend out the number of first round picks, the years that you could receive picks from in this last owners meetings?
Good call.
After they redid Myles Garrett's contract, because you see the structure of this trade, it's picks in 27, 28, and 29. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the Rams were like, if you can get us out to 30, I'll give you a first round. You know what I mean?
Well, it was McVay who said this will never pass, but that he fundamentally understood where Andrew Berry was coming from. So it does suggest, and we said this at the top, that like, how long have these teams known that this was probably going to happen without figuring out the final little details? But I think this stems back months. I really do think that the Browns have to have been open to it from after they fired Stefanski and they figured all this out. We're starting over again. Myles Garrett will listen. And the Rams are the team that called. We don't know who else called.
I want the Rams to trade for Mason Rudolph. Give him a little veteran presence behind
those
Stafford.
Two together again.
I just think it's I think it's smart and it's something that should be thought about. All right, take a break. Stay right there. All right, we are back. Let's close this thing out by getting you caught up on what else is going on. Let's do some news.
Hi, guys. I'm so glad I finally got to meet y'all. And, you know, somebody in the autumn of her life doesn't get out much. So I had almost forgot what it was like to actually have fun. So thank you for that. And Dan, we had the oddest interaction at the end of the wedding. I had looked at Elise and I had said, should we invite all of them to our New Year's Eve party? And she said, yeah, they're great. And then you looked confused, but I didn't think anything of it. So I gave you a hug goodbye because we hug everybody here and left. So anyway, just so you know, I was trying to include you in our New Year's Eve scavenger hunt, and maybe y'all can come. So thanks for coming to Texas. I hope you had a great time, and go Chiefs.
That makes so much more sense.
Damn it.
What is this wonderful woman's name again, there. Justin?
Lisa.
Lisa, that makes so much more sense. You were asking, should we invite him/them to the scavenger hunt? It wasn't, should I say goodbye to him? Okay. All right, that's, hold on. That we're, if you're not aware of our last episode, some of this will be confusing, but go back and check it out and subscribe and comment. Yes, Connor, real quick.
To Lisa, because immediately after I said that she was in the autumn of her life, I told my wife that, and she was like, you monster. And she was like, I hope that she knows that we also view ourselves as like very much late summer, early autumn of our own lives. So I was hoping that, you know, that would come through, but I don't think it has.
Spin yeah, this is yeah. the guy selling Cleveland supermarkets to women from Los Angeles. So good luck, Connor.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Lisa. And it was great to see you. And it would be great to get to that.
I remember her now. She was that whole cast of women were wonderful.
It's like, honey, I know you wanted me to spend New Year's Eve with you and the kids, but I have a upscale Arlington, Texas scavenger hunt I got to get to. Peace. I got to catch a bird. Good stuff. All right. Hey, AJ Brown. There are rumors out there, and I don't want to linger on this too long because by the time we, get these words out of our mouth, it could be out of date. But A.J. Brown to the Patriots continues to be percolating. The first round pick that was the hang up may not be a hang up anymore. But as we record this live right now on YouTube, it's not a done deal yet, but that could change at any moment. So we're keeping an eye on the A.J. Brown trade. And if it doesn't happen by the end of this live stream, we'll hit on it in our next episode. In other news, now that we are past that June 1st deadline, kind of real quick, Cliff's Notes. I like to go to you on these things. People don't even know what Cliff's Notes are anymore. But before the internet, it was a good way to cheat on books you didn't actually want to read and have a general idea what they were about. Why is June 1 a important date financially in our league?
Because it allows you to spread the cap hit of a deal over two seasons. So that way it becomes less of a slog, basically. The weight of one transaction just sitting on one year's cap versus the other. So
someone chimes in the chat, Cliff Notes, not Cliff's Notes. I would like you to do a research there, fair listener. I believe I am correct. People think it's Cliff Notes, but I believe it's Cliff's. Okay, now back.
Spark Notes was better anyway.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that one. It was a yellow, little yellow book for those geriatric millennials like myself.
It's Cliff's Notes with an S.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Gen Xer knows too. Gen Xer.
I never used them because I read the whole book.
I read everything, cover to cover.
A to Z.
A to Z. Other names floated in potential trade talks now that we are past that June 1st deadline. And thank you, Connor, for clearing that up. Alvin Kamara of the Saints. And wide receiver Brandon Ayuk of the Niners. Per Albert Breer, your buddy, Connor, Kamara reportedly wants to finish his career in New Orleans, don't we all? But they signed Travis Etienne, and there are more running back needy teams out there. The Packers stand out, especially with the Josh Jacobs unfortunate news last week. Bert Breer also said that the Broncos may have some interest. Follow the yellow brick road, of course. The coach of the Broncos is Sean Payton, who coached Alvin Kamara during his greatest seasons with the Saints, including his 6-touchdown game in the 2020 Christmas Day game that won me a fantasy title. And for
we've
that
never
reason
heard
alone,
about that incident.
I will always love you, Alvin Kamara. As far as the Brandon Ayuk saga, Jeremy Fowler reported that he has talked to two rival executives who believe that Ayuk is, quote, untradeable. It's going to be hard to move on. He has that knee issue. We're going to get to another wide receiver that had a difficult knee injury that he's trying to get back from over in East Rutherford. But with the Ayuk injury, it was a complicated knee injury that he suffered right after signing that contract 2 seasons ago. So that plus the fact that he, quote, kind of ghosted the 49ers at times. So a lot of money, an injury, and some concerns about the character slash behavior of the player. The 49ers are stuck in mud on this one, Connor.
Yeah, it's a weird deal. I mean, Ayuk may at some point, at one time or another, be in one of these like wide receiver cattle calls for a team that loses a guy in like week 9, but there's no motivation for the 49ers to get rid of him at this point because there's really no return offers, you know, that are even vaguely attractive. And I think it was Jaden Daniels was asked about it a couple days ago because they're best friends from their Arizona State days. I don't even really think he knows what's going on with Ayuk. And, you know, I don't even think he's standing on the table to get him over to Washington and they need wide receiver help. So I think that there's a lot of issues there, and it's sad. Sad when potential doesn't you know get fully realized.
You don't see it. I mean, he was I would call him a star wide receiver. He ghosted the Niners, but he ghosted all of us because you hear very little from him, if anything. They were able to void a bunch of his money because of the injury thing. Some of these players, I think, when they go into a deep dark rehab, it's not going to
thank you, scientist.
It's not going to toy with everyone the same from the mind up. I think it's a tough spot, but like. I don't know who would trade for him at this point. And to the Daniels thing, Daniels is like his best friend. And there was a talk at one point he really wanted to go to Washington and the two of them would be together. And like, that doesn't feel like it's on the table. Nothing feels like it's on the table.
I'll now connect the 49ers to the other team I just hinted at, the New York Giants. They have their own star wide receiver in Malik Nabers, who's coming off a complicated knee injury and subsequent surgery. We talked about it last week. John Harbaugh, some distressing comments from a certain perspective about it's an unclear timeline for Nabers, and they're hoping that he's back at training camp, and it would be great. But if he's not back, it would also be great. That was confusing. But the door seems open that he won't be ready for the start of the 2026 season. Now, I don't think the Giants are going to go pick up the phone and try to bring in another expensive wide receiver who also has a bad knee injury that we don't know the severity of and his ability to come back from. So I don't know if Ayuk and the Giants are a match, but the Giants seem to be in distress at the position. To that point, they have now signed 477-year-old Odell Beckham Jr. Like, how? I mean, I know he's probably not as old as he seems. He's probably like 33. But, you know, when Odell tore his ACL at that last Rams Super Bowl against the Bengals, he was playing at a high level. That was the last time he was a high-level player, and that was like about 4 years ago now. Juju Smith-Schuster, also signed by the Giants, who had been hanging out there for a while. They also signed veteran wide receiver Braxton Berrios. That guy's been bouncing around like a rubber bouncy ball in this league for a while now. So here we are. You bring in Beckham, Juju Smith-Schuster, this would be incredible about 5 years ago. Now it just speaks to the Giants and maybe the Achilles heel, which is their wide receiver death. Oh, he's done it. He mentioned Achilles. He could tie that into the fact that the three Giants players have torn their Achilles during the spring workouts, including wide receiver Gunnar Olszewski. Here we go, Giants SOS.
I mean, I don't know how anyone saw what the Giants did over the weekend, which is to try to have Jackson Dart and Abdul Carter, and for some reason, Jameis Winston speak about the result of that team meeting where they were supposedly buried the hatchet on this Trump thing, and then thought it would be a phenomenal idea to add Juju Smith-Schuster and Odell Beckham to this group of people as we're trying to build a new organization that is taken seriously. Mm. I don't see it. I understand that depth is thin at this point, but that's why you got to draft those players. You know, that's why you got to go up and you got like, there's no way that you're going to be able to piecemeal a receiving core together, especially with Jackson Dart, because he runs so much. And this is going to mean like second or third unanticipated movements for these receivers without ACLs. It's a bad mix. I really don't like this.
Well, they did draft that player in Malik Nabers. I think this all tells me much more about him and the fact that they're kind of scrambling to, you know, here in June to figure out what to do with that weak position. I mean, I don't know. I thought John Harbaugh was brought here to bring order, to bring a Harbaugh-esque kind of, like, this is going to look different and feel different to Giants fans who have been around for a long time. It's going to look like what you expected. And it's not John Harbaugh's fault, but the last couple of weeks, like, the vibes on this team are weird.
There's too much this drama Giants offseason around the Giants is wacky. Now. Yeah, there's way too much outside noise and nonsense around this team. I don't think you're doing that, Mark. I don't blame Harbaugh for really any of this right now, and certainly wide receiver room. Like, I think this Nabers thing really throws a wrench into their entire offense. And, you know, I had said that I am bullish on getting behind the Giants this year, is actually now making that leap. I'm hedging on that a little bit. Like, let's see how the rest of this summer plays out. But like many of my friends back East are New York Giants fans, and they're understandably excited for Odell Beckham to be back. Like, oh, I can't wait to take the 13 jersey out of the closet and put it back on. And I, you know, pumping the brakes as a friend / Dick Jets fan, I was like, let's hold off. I'm not so sure he even makes the team. I mean,
right, I agree.
So just because Odell Beckham's on the roster now doesn't mean he's going to be, you know, suiting up come week one, but he is in the building, and that really says a lot. In other news, the Vikings have their general manager. Mark, I think you'll like this. This is a story of stick-to-itiveness and overcoming the odds and making a name of yourself. Nolan Teasley, do I have that right? Is the new general manager, formerly an assistant general manager with the Seattle Seahawks. Tom Pelissero had this note on it. The Pellraiser giving us some context. Putting a human story to a name. Pellraiser does it again. After 6 years in a marketing job, Nolan Teasley wrote letters to all 32 teams in 2013 asking for an opportunity to get back into football. He got one interview with the Seahawks, and John Schneider hired him as an intern 13 years later. He is now one of the 32 general managers in the NFL. That is a cool story.
Yeah, you know, when I was coming out of college, I went to American University after multiple other colleges, and my plan was to go work for the Browns. In any capacity.
Wait,
right?
One second, Mark. You know how we have the old-time Springsteen-y type music when I tell a story?
Yeah.
We need some like Old Testament Moses music when Mark's telling
a
story from his youth.
You are roughly 5 years older than me, and just advertised a podcast of a top 10 list from 2006. I mean,
wow. You know,
well, no, but I mean, I just find it's a bit absurd.
Can we search Moses music in our Rights Free catalog?
Well, we know Justin will follow your little command. No doubt about it. I was going to say that the Browns moved in the final year of college and there was no Browns team. So I wrote every single team in the league, just as this guy did, asking, I'll do anything in your complex. And I got 32 letters back, and not one of them offered me a single job, and the Seattle Seahawks did not offer me a job. I love this guy's stick-to-itiveness. He's only 42, and he's married with four kids, so it kind of tells me that he's like early mature, got going. He rose up quickly with the Seahawks, so it'll be interesting. It's a weird, Connor, it's a bit of a strange time to take over the Vikings, but I kind of like this hire. I like the idea of it.
Oh, well, the idea of it. We'll see. It's a tough job.
My thing is, like, if you want something, like, that's what you have to do. And, you know, I mean, okay, cool, I saw this job on LinkedIn and I clicked applied and I got it is kind of one way to go about it. But, like, I wrote letters to 60 newspapers when I was graduating college. So I think it was almost double what Nolan did.
Got him.
To be honest. So, yeah.
Screw you, bro.
Feel like I worked harder. Yeah, Nolan's tweeting about that.
Okay. We talked about this with Michael Sean Dugar about Russell Wilson and the next step of his NFL career. Well, his next step is leaving the NFL. He is finalizing a deal to join CBS Sports as an analyst. So that is just an update on that note. And that's what's happening in the news. Yes, Myles Garrett, a member of the Los Angeles Rams. Unbelievable. Final thoughts on that.
First, like, how pissed is Russell Wilson that he thought today was going to be like a referendum on his career, and then you just get absolutely slammed?
Kind of on brand also for Russ. Yeah.
But I think this trade is stunning. I think that more teams should do it. I think that the Rams, when we look back on this 10 years from now, 15 years from now, their ability to just reload and not rebuild after we look at the amount of veteran talent that they've acquired and their lack of first round picks will absolutely shoot in the ass that draft picks theory that just became so prevalent in the NFL. And I think that good teams who know what they want can build teams quickly.
You know, my mind went to, and I don't have a good voice, I'm sorry, but like my mind went to John Elway when this thing started to go down. And it's another thing that Cleveland Browns fans, a certain bunch of them, will not agree with me on. But when Elway, after all those Super Bowl losses and after, you know, knifing Cleveland in the heart multiple times, finally won that Super Bowl, I could be happy for him. Like, I was rooting for him. And there was something about the arc of an NFL career and to overcome all this. This is the thing you haven't done. We got a bunch of quarterbacks in the league like that right now. As a Browns fan, I could be happy for him. And when Myles Garrett raises a Lombardi, and I know he will, I will be happy for him. Like, I'm also happy for what the Browns did for the Browns today too. I mean, it really is the rare win-win trade, and it's another win for the NFL. It's June 1st at 11:42 a.m. in Los Angeles, and all anyone is talking about is the NFL today.
They've done it again. I'm of the opinion that a lot of the late May and June news cycle of the NFL is completely synthetic and not important in any way. But here was a real story. This is a big one. And this one can shape the 2026 season and put your Cleveland Browns mark on a trajectory to a better tomorrow. So when Dave Damschek asked you 12 years ago, how does it feel? I ask you again. How does it feel in five words or less, Mark?
Ask me in 12 years.
Very good answer. All right. Thank you to everybody who jumped on the live stream. And we will be back. Most likely, we will be back on Thursday with the latest. If something crazy happens, if real news as opposed to synthetic news hits, then we will do what we have to do. But in this case, we're done for today. On Thursday, we'll also check in on our poll results from our quarantine groups that we put together. See where people came down on Mark's choice of a friend star, Connor going with the highest figure in the Catholic Church. So many options out there. All right, everybody. Thank you again for joining us. Myles Garrett to the Rams. Heed the call.